Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, and I'm here once again on a Friday, my favorite day of the week, Podcast Friday, with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how's it going today?
Doing great. And yes, certainly echo your sentiments. Podcast Friday is always great days. Always get to talk to some great people. Looking forward to today's guest as well.
Yeah. And Al, who do we have to thank for the introduction to Brendan? I think it might be
Rob, I believe.
I think it might be Rob, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Rob Drinan.
A little cocktail party that he held.
Yeah, the party I keep hearing about because it was the one I didn't go to and Al tells me it was pretty amazing. So I won't make that mistake again. But today we're thrilled to be joined by Brendan Taylor, president of Mavericks VFX. Let me tell you something, my friends. If you're a fan of jaw-dropping visuals, you've got to check out the website at mavericks-vfx.com. I've never seen anything like this. Brendan's going to be on the show. I check out his website. Blew me away. So do yourself a favor. Go check it out. It's pretty amazing. You have to see it to believe it. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, Brendan, I wanted to start at the very beginning because we had a really good first call and you haven't always been doing what you're doing in terms of owning a business. I always wonder what inspired you to start your own business? Because sometimes when I look back, I'm like, geez, if I knew what I was in for at the beginning, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I'd love to hear why it started and how has that vision that you had evolved over time?
I started by accident. I had some very expensive camera equipment that I wanted to buy, a Canon 5D Mark II. So if you know your cameras, that'll put me around 2010, 2011. I had been working in a company called Mr. X, who are phenomenal, a visual effects company. I found my legs there and then decided to try independent supervising. I needed this camera. And I thought, okay, well, the best way to write this off. So I just got the piece of paper and an accountant friend of mine who ended up being a managing director at Mavericks many years later, set it up for me. And that's as far as I thought it was going to go, to be perfectly honest. So we started working on this show called The Transporter for HBO. Not many people saw it, but the budget wasn't as high as they needed it to be. So I built a team, found people to build a network for me, found a bunch of compositors, two of which I'm still working with today. Sorry, compositors are, they're artists who basically, the last part of the pipeline, who put everything together and make it look all pretty. They get rid of the green screen and all that kind of stuff. So I started working with them and it was just so different from anything that I had ever experienced before, where we were all on the level. It was just a shorthand and it was more than anything, it was fun. So I look forward to getting in the car and driving 45 minutes away on a bad day to see these guys and work with these guys and just tackle problems as they came. So that was the genesis of it. And that part lasted for about 4 years. I was actually just talking to Michael Hatton, who is one of the first members, that there was 4 years where it was just kind of that size of like 5-6 people. Maybe we'd bring on one or two more. And I talked to a business consultant that my uncle had set me up with. And he said, what's the goal for your business? I said, I think just to have fun and work on creative stuff. And he's like, that is absolutely the wrong answer. And I was like, well, what's the right answer? And he said it was growth. And I didn't see it and I didn't believe it because I thought for me, I was just happy doing what I was doing. But there came a point when this movie Suicide Squad was in town. It was a big Warner Brothers movie, probably $200 million starring Will Smith. It was in Toronto. I'm a pretty good talker. you get me in the room and I can talk my way into a job sometimes, not all the time. But I had done that on this show and we had no business talking to Suicide Squad. Let me be clear. Like, we're 4 or 5 people and I was really bigging this up. I was like, oh yeah, we worked on this. We worked on that. And I wasn't lying, but we only just did tiny little parts on RoboCop, right? And they were like, oh, wow, okay, great. And at that time, our offices were a former sound studio. So our render farm, where all the magic happens, was actually in the recording booth on a chair, like 30 dishes in the sink. Like, it was not the nicest looking place. And the visual effects producer, to her credit, was like, you know what? This is going great, Brendan. Why don't I send the team on over and they can take a look at your shop and all that? And I was like, not a good time, you know, under construction right now. She's like, okay, Brendan, thank you very much. Call us when you're ready. And that for me was, that was a light going off because I always had a back door. I always had a way out. My lease on that sound studio was 1 year long. I had enough money in the bank if we had no more work that I could at least get to the end of the lease. And it was comfortable. And I think at that point, I realized that you got to push your chips in. Because if you give yourself that comfortable out, you're not going to go through those difficult times. And any growth and any success that you get might even be accidental. So I really realized that that needs to be a commitment, needs to be a conscious thought. And I knew when she said, okay, Brendan, just the way that she said it, I was like, I'm not being taken seriously here. And how can I expect other people to take me seriously and take this company seriously if I don't even take it seriously? If I always have a backdoor. And we were also like, we're really arrogant about the stuff that we worked on. Like, we're going to do stuff for the art of it or because they're filmmakers we respect. And then there was a show which actually ended up being incredibly fun, but it was like a Lifetime miniseries, a 2-part Lifetime miniseries. And I do recognize that it was arrogant, but I was like, oh, we're not going to work on that. And then I realized that I couldn't bring people into the studio because there was like mice running around the place, literally. It was tiny. Like, nobody was going to have any faith in us. So we took that job. And at the time, actually, this is a little funny side note. At the time, the US dollar was at par with the Canadian dollar. And I asked the producer, who's a friend, like, hey, can I bid this in US? Because, you know, a lot of the equipment we have to buy is US and the exchange and blah, blah, blah. He's like, I don't care. Go for it. Like, what is it? It makes no difference to me. So 2, 3, 4 months into this project, the Canadian dollar just tanked. So we actually had an extra, like, you know, 15% on top of whatever profit. So we took everything there and then we built our studio. So any profit we made, and it was like 60 grand, which was like amazing. We were able to do amazing things with the space. I mean, it helps when your wife is an architect. But yeah, that's basically how it started. And then that same producer who was like, I don't care, actually went on to do a J.J. Abrams series called 11/22/63. And then went on to do The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, wow.
And if you remember how I was talking about this Lifetime miniseries, I was kind of like thumbing my nose at it. But that's how I met Joe Boccia. And then Joe went on to 11/22. And then Joe went on to Handmaid's. And Handmaid's Tale is the show that kind of built Mavericks.
Well, a couple things there. My wife would be very glad that you didn't have the arrogance to walk away from the Lifetime series because she loves those. Anytime I see her watching something, it's always Lifetime. But you said something that I think is really important, and you called it bigging up your company. And years ago, I've told this story before. It's where the title of the podcast comes from. It's a Tony Robbins saying, success leaves clues. Mm-hmm. If you want to be successful, find people who are already successful in your space, model their behavior, their beliefs, you'll reap similar rewards. But there's another one that you just said. Tony Robbins talks about using your personal power. And he talks about, who was it? It was a famous producer. And you might know the story, but he faked his way onto a Hollywood lot and he found an empty, I can't remember the name, but he found an empty trailer. It might've been Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg, it is.
Yeah, and what a great story. So, you know, I love that you took that risk and you might've embellished the truth a bit, but Al and I were just talking about, I was invited to a function last night and it was 23 years ago. It was this tiny little restaurant near us in Oakville. And where they moved to, Wolfgang Puck had come in. It was a massive location and it just didn't last. And it was too big of a location. And so they pulled out and it sat empty for a long time. This tiny little restaurant took that big risk And here they are 30 years later celebrating this massive success. It's try to get in there nowadays. Like, it's just, so I think it's such an important message to other entrepreneurs and founders that, and Al was saying that to me this morning, like, if you don't take the risk, nothing is going to happen. Right.
Yep.
And I think that's such an important message.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's nothing wrong with it being scary. Right. Like, I remember doing that and then being like, are we really doing this? Like, I have no right to be doing this. I don't know what I'm doing. What are we doing right now? It was comfortable. It was easy. But there was something inside that was like, and being taken seriously for me is something that's really important and in some ways is an Achilles heel. But I was like, I will never be taken seriously in this business if I'm just hopping job to job and just screwing around with my friends.
Brendan, you also mentioned, you used the word arrogant.
Yeah.
And where I'm going to go with this, do you think that's maybe a trend with creative in your world? Because you said, we just want to create. It's less about the business. It's more about the artistic part of things. Do you see that as maybe a little bit of a trend in your industry that people start out that way with that mindset?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, when we're getting applications and trying to hire people, the younger artists always want to work on something cool. And you get older people, like more experienced artists. And at the end of the day, whether it is, I mean, every once in a while, you're going to be pinching yourself. Like right now, we're working on 1923 and I get to work on stuff with Harrison Ford in it. So every once in a while, you get to work on something and it's really exciting and you pinch yourself, right? But most of the time, the work is the work. And there is so much more interesting stuff if you just look at the work in itself.
Right.
And you get the older artists and they just want like a nice, comfortable place where they can like, it's a marathon, right?
Right.
Like, but when you're younger, it's a sprint.
Yeah.
So it's that transition from sprint into marathon that the more experienced artists don't care who, you know, we used to have this thing called Eyes on a Truck, right? And we were asked to work on some kids show where they would just film trucks. It was a like for young kids, toddlers and stuff. And the trucks would talk to each other. And we just put little like CGI eyes on the trucks and call it a day. But back in our arrogant days, we literally were like, oh, God, we're not working on Eyes on a Truck. And we have come back to it over the years. And it was a huge mistake. We should have done it because the margins were high. It's calm, easy work. Sometimes you just want to put on a podcast and just put Eyes on a Truck. You don't always want to be solving the most difficult problem you can solve. You got other stuff going on in your life, you know, like whatever, dog's got diarrhea. You just don't want to be solving any problem other than that.
Yeah.
So we always look back to it that like there's a beauty in doing those things simply and well and efficiently too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, every once in a while you got to put Eyes on a Truck. I know that's not transferable to any other industry.
No, I think it is. Like, I think it is. I think you hit on some key things. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's, I think there's a lot in that message that is actually transferable, even if it's not specific, like you say, to Eyes on a Truck.
I did want to talk briefly about the Steven Spielberg thing, because my very first movie that I was on, I was assistant to a director and they were editing on the Universal lot, which is where Amblin is. And I had heard the story, you know, I was 22 years old. I was on the Universal lot and the director gave me his pass to like walk around. He's like, go explore. So I looked in the sound stages and stuff. And then I saw Amblin and I was like, because he literally walked right in and I was walking up. It was post 9/11, right? So they had more security guards than they would have had. And I tried to do the same thing. The security guard goes, not another wannabe Spielberg, please, not today.
That's great.
And one other story I heard, which is pertinent, is Jeffrey Sachs, who was a director of a movie that I worked on 20 years ago. He told me a story about how he kept trying to apply at the London theater and he kept getting rejected. And then he got this really nasty one that had the letterhead on it. And I don't remember the name of the Lord that was on the letterhead, this nasty rejection letter. Let's call it Lord Taylor. But he wrote back and he was like so angry and pissed off. He was like, my uncle, Lord Taylor, has told me that you are the guy to talk to about getting a job at the theater. And then the guy wrote back, Lord Taylor said that? And he got the job. He lied to the man and he got the job. And so I asked him, I guess the moral of the story is that you can lie to get the job that you want. He's like, that's not the moral, Brennan. The moral is that you have to be able to back it up.
There you go. Yes.
Brendan, you had, when we talked earlier, you had some great stories about when you were starting out and some of those challenges, like you just alluded to, you know, some of the things you had to go through and some of the times when you thought, hey, this is going to be it. And then it turned out, oh, it wasn't. So can you just talk about maybe some of the overlooked challenges of starting and growing a business and maybe what's been most surprising to you on your journey?
Yeah, sure. So we work in creative services. I believe that there's creativity everywhere. I think every single job, no matter what it is. I mean, you can see over my shoulder that book there. It's Rick Rubin's book. Rick Rubin's a Hollywood producer. It's on the creative act. So I believe every business is creative. It's necessary to be an entrepreneur, to be creative, no matter what the problem is that you're solving. But we're in creative services, which is different. We are being the creative vessel for our clients. And that process is messy. Like the creative process can be very messy. And when we were four people, five people, it was very easy to just toss things across the room. Hey, you got this, you need this, you need this. And my brain works very much that way. I'm not a very linear person. I'm very non-linear the way that I think. And we reached a point at around 10 or 12 people that mode of working wouldn't work anymore. Because when we're five people, each person getting 10 minutes a day with me to talk through what we're doing is not even an hour, right? But when you get to 10, 20 people, you can't do that anymore. So you need to have processes and systems in place in order for people to be able to do their job. One of the things that Dimitri, who was the accountant who got me the company in the first place and became the managing director, one of the things he would say was, Brendan, the plan is what happens when you're asleep. Which I really love as a sentiment because it means that you don't need to have your hands on the wheel at all times. So long as you've made a great plan, you're creating a track for the company to go down. And just the way that I think had always thought that that was like so constrictive, but it's actually incredibly freeing. What was constrictive was needing 10, 15 minutes a day with every single person in the morning so that they would know what they were supposed to do that day. What was freeing was like not having to show up until 11 because I know what everybody's doing. So that was a big thing for me is that even though my method of working is incredibly, it's not messy to me. Like I know where everything is, right? But it doesn't work for other people. So you need to have a common understanding from everybody, top to bottom, followed by all, an understanding of how we're supposed to work.
I think that's challenging for a lot of entrepreneurs, right? Because in the beginning, you are doing everything. You're meeting with your team. And I've experienced that too. As my team grew and we generally have morning huddles and we're 5 minutes each. Well, when there was three of us, okay, we got 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then there's five of us and then so on and so forth. So I came to the point where I can't do this every day. I've got great people in place. So now instead of Monday through Friday, I'm Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So I'm setting the tone for the week. I'm checking in. And eventually that will probably just bookend the week Monday and Friday. But every once in a while, Brendan, something happens. Maybe you lose a key person. Maybe you lose a big client. I've just met you, but I can guarantee it's happened at some point in your career because everyone I talk to, including ourselves, it's happened. Someone throws something at you, the monkey wrench, right? How do you keep yourself motivated and just say, that's it, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. Because I think those lessons are really valuable because I've shared this with Al. Early on in our career, there were times when I went home and I'm pulling my hair out going, why the heck am I doing this? Because I left a very successful corporate job. Now there's things that I don't miss about that, but you know, getting paid every 2 weeks was a great thing when you go yeah. to something where that's not a guarantee anymore. So what are the things that you did or do to say, this is my belief, I'm going to stay on track with this and stay motivated?
I guess I'm bringing up Dimitri a lot. He's a good friend. We lived together in university, but it's about the people around you a lot of the time. And that doesn't necessarily need to be people working at the company. And this wasn't by design. It would just happen that if he was feeling down on something, I would be the one picking him up. And then I'd be feeling down on something and he'd be the one picking me up. And it was just this like sort of dance that we did that we just had each other to help prop ourselves up when we were feeling down. And that turned into more people and more people and more people until like my entire leadership team. We just trust each other so much that I often don't think, you know, I'm not doing this for myself anymore. I'm doing this for other people, which can be a burden in and of itself, right? But that's a really big part. And I think the other part
because we work in Hollywood. It's really fun. It really is, but not always. Sometimes it's awful. And guess what? There's awful people in Hollywood too. Like, really hard to deal with people. And I just love movies so much. I love filmmaking so much that sometimes I just need to take a break away and just remember that, right? Arguments about parking spots and raises and all the kind of stuff that you deal with as a business owner. Sometimes you just have to put that aside and just recenter and be like, hold on, wait, I'm working on a Harrison Ford show right now. Like, that's pretty great. And then sometimes that's all it takes. It's like, all right, and you dust yourself off. And I think the last piece is that we're not trying to get anywhere. And by that, I mean, it's always a process, right? You're always in it. You're not trying to, in my opinion, you're trying to get to a state, right, of being for your company. You're not trying to get to an end goal. When we were coming up with our like big goal or 10-year goal or whatever it is, or 5-year goal, like what do we want to have accomplished by that point? We had said like we want an Oscar or we want an Emmy or something like that. And someone was actually, I'm so glad they were brave enough to say this, but they were like, that is a very vain goal. And that is a goal that has a finish line. And then once you hit that, then what? Like, you know, in revenge stories, the people feel empty as soon as they get the revenge, right? Like, after you hit that, and he's like, it's incredibly based on other people. Like, I've been to the Emmys 5 times and never won, right? Like, it's so dependent on the class that you're in. And they say that the nomination is the win. And that's true, because at the end of the day, it could be up to like the difference of one person, one swing vote, right? Whether you get it or not. Would it be nice? Of course. Would I love to be up on that stage? Yes, 100%. Except for that 30 seconds before they announce the winner. And the Emmy goes to him like, please not me. Please not me. I'm going to trip on the way up the stairs. Please not me. It's like someone else like, oh, thank God. Oh, man. But we changed our 5-year goal. And our 5-year goal became, we want to be the best employer in the industry. Full stop. Why? Because you can't fully achieve it. And you have to nurture that. Even if you do get to that point where you are that, the ability to slide back is so strong that it is something that you have to constantly be nurturing. And it is a goal that you can have in your mind with every decision. Getting an Emmy as a goal, and like I said, the plan is what happens here in the middle of the night. Like, we want to know that at 4 a.m., when people need to make a decision and they have nobody else to call, that they can at least look to that and say, I'm going to make the call based on this value. And the value of getting an Emmy or getting an Oscar is not going to help Eva at 4 a.m. about making the right decision and what she should do, or any of our producers. But to be the best employer in visual effects, someone can say, you know what? I guess 4 a.m. is too a weird time, but like 10 p.m., I've got my entire crew here and it's going to be another 3 hours. I'm going to take it on the chin. I'm going to call the client and say, we're going to deliver tomorrow afternoon. I'm so sorry. As opposed to keeping everybody here. And obviously we deliver for our clients, but having that as the goal means so much more to me and feels transferable to everyone else in the company. Like, some people, our accounting team is never going to be able to be up on that stage with an Emmy, right? But they are just as important a part. Our IT team, right? Our infrastructure team, the ones who built this entire pipeline that we work and make, they don't get to go up on that stage. So how's that goal going to help them? But being the best employer in visual effects, that's something everybody can relate to.
There's so much in that answer. I think we could probably go have a 3-hour conversation just on exploring that one answer. But you said something that I think is incredibly important in terms of some of these clues we're trying to tease out for other people. You talked about having really good people around you. And that's one of the things that has become very apparent to me in this podcast, because when we did it, and I tell everybody this is no secret, doing the podcast was a branding exercise because we had launched a new brand. And I thought, how do we catch up to our original branding? Because now there's 2 different brands. But something happened along the way. Al and I got friendships and added clients and had relationships and centers of influence. And all of a sudden, there's this community there. And I'm seeing people leaning on people that they haven't even met, but they've heard through their ears driving to work on one of these podcasts. And I think that's going to happen when someone listens to yours, Brendan, because the very first episode we did in this series, Success Leaves Clues, guy comes on and he talks about a cancer diagnosis when he was a kid and what that meant. And the number of people that have come back, this is a couple of years ago now, we've had this episode, but people keep talking about it. It says, that was the kick in the pants that I needed, because here I was feeling sorry for myself because I didn't win this contract or what have you. And they realize other people go through struggles too. It's not just you, because at the time you feel like it's just you, right? So having people around you, either in a community like the podcast where there's other entrepreneurs and business leaders that are having challenges and you can lean on each other. And quite frankly, I think you'll find this too, once your episode goes live, people will reach out to you and they'll want to connect with you and then say, hey, I'm going through that too. How did you do this? Or, hey, here's the advice that I can offer. So I'm so glad you talked about that, because I don't know if you found this, my circle has actually gotten a little bit smaller of people in my personal life over time. And I value quality over quantity, because life is challenging, not only in business, but in personal. I was saying to Al, joking around this week, I said, this whole adulting thing is totally overrated, because things happen in life. And it's so important to have those people that can support you. So I'm so glad you talked about that. I'd also love, and this one's a selfish one for me, because we're running a company as well, and I specialize in employee benefits, of course, which support creating a good workplace. But is there something that you can share? And I don't expect you to give away all your secret sauce, but what's worked really well in creating that environment where you say this is the best place to work?
It's a clinical answer, actually. It was the employee net promoter score. It's, for your listeners who don't know, it's pretty simple. You just ask your employees, like, would you recommend Mavericks to a friend or family member who is looking for somewhere to work? A score of 40 is good, because they throw out all of the like medium, whatever the neutral scores, and then they subtract the negative from the positive. And a positive is like 8 to 10 or something like that. So people have to really love it. So a score of 40 is good. You can have a negative score, which is quite bad. But that was at our peak, we had a score of 45. But if you do it consistently, we did it every quarter, we would send it out, you would be able to track trends. And one of the hardest things that I found about running a business was that when I'm doing visual effects, I can look at a shot, I can know if I like it or not, what's wrong with it, what I need to do in order to fix it, and I can check in the next day to see if we're on the right track and know if what we had discussed is working, or the person gets it and they're going to get there, or if they need more help. I know all those things. In running a business, I don't even know if people like it. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know how to fix it, you know? So it becomes really difficult to just sort of like throw a dart at a dartboard and say, hey, that's the problem. But if you're doing this consistently and your scores are going up and down in trends with other things, then you can target those things and say, well, hold on. Is there a relationship between, and this was our big revelation, which shouldn't be a revelation, but the data supported it. Is there a relationship between overtime and hours worked and stress and employee happiness? And it is a 1-to-1 ratio. So that for us was a big thing. And that was our personal trend, because we work in a business where there's overtime and stress a lot. But if you're tracking other things as well, and it seems so simple, because it is, but it is just truly asking people for like a number. How would you rate your experience here? And then they have comments, and then you go through the comments, and of course you get hurt by them because people, you know, they don't get what they're, and then you give yourself a bit of time and you're like, well, hold on. If people are brave enough to write these comments and give us a low score, then let's look at it.
Yeah. And just on that note, I know Al wants to jump in here, but Al has asked for that feedback. Al is the CEO of both of our firms. He oversees everything. And he has asked for the partners meeting that's coming up this week. What did I do right? You know, and what did I do wrong, sort of thing. So yeah, hopefully his feelings don't get hurt. And he takes it the way that you're saying that, hey, yeah, maybe this is something we need to, and I promise to be nice. I'm always nice to Al anyway. And you know what? He does a lot of things right anyway. So I think we're going to be okay.
It does hurt. Doesn't matter. Like, even if you're tough. We had someone quit, and in the exit interview, they tore us a new one. And then I took a look at it, and it was Ryan's decision, and I was so mad. I was like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy, I'm glad we're rid of him. Like, obviously a very juvenile emotional response to something. And he's like, Brendan, this is a roadmap, dude.
Yeah.
You look at everything that he said here. Is he wrong? He's not wrong. We got to fix these things. Take the emotion out of it. I actually talked to someone who worked with Michael Bay, who's a notorious, difficult director. He's actually at DreamWorks. So I told him the same Amblin story that I just told you. And I talked to him about working with difficult people. And he gave me this advice, which is very hard to do, but very pertinent, which is take the information and leave the emotion. And that's exactly what Ryan was saying to me. He's like, they're okay to hate you as a boss. You're a nice guy. They like you as a person. They don't like you as a boss. You can't change who you are as a person very easily, but you can change who you are as a boss. And it was eye-opening for me because I'm so like emotion forward that he was just like, no, take that off. Roadmap.
I love everything you've talked about so far. I find it really interesting that you put as your big vision, and you even said it, you know, something that literally you can't achieve. Like it's a moving target.
Yeah.
Which basically flies in the face of every business book you would ever read, right? That things have to be measurable. You have to know if you've achieved them. How do you know if you've done it, right? So I found that really, really interesting. It's a different approach and I like it, but it's just, I'm pretty sure if you read any business book, that would fly in the face of what it would tell you. But it sounds like it's working for you.
Maybe. I don't know. Let's check the ENPS this quarter. Let's see. I'm a big baseball fan. Like, I'm not good at the sport, and I've been watching it seriously for only 10 years. But what I really appreciate about that, which is what I try and do, is the minute that the players take the field, it's on the players, right? But up to that point, it's about training. It's about scouting. It's about physical conditioning. It's about mindset. And those are the things that the ball club gives to the players so that they can be their best. And I like to look at Mavericks the same way. It's like pipeline, training, onboarding, psychological safety, all those sorts of things that are going to allow them to access the creative power that we hire them to is on us. At the end of the day, the execution is on them.
So Brendan, looking back, now that you're where you are, what has turned out to matter less than you thought? And how did that realization affect your priorities?
Yeah, I mean, I think we, based on what we've talked about today, I think the content of what we're working on is less important than how we go about it. And it used to matter, like I said, arrogance, but it used to matter a lot what I worked on and what I would tell people at the high school reunion I was working on. But that doesn't bring you joy, or it brings you some like fleeting external happiness and satisfaction and purpose. Right now, it's our purpose to be, like I said, the best employer. So we could put eyes on trucks so long as we had fun and people enjoyed working at the company.
Well, Al, you might jump in there, but I think we're almost at the point. My favorite part of the podcast, Al, I guess it was over a year ago, maybe more now.
Probably more.
Al came up and he said, what do you think about this signature question? I loved it immediately, but what I love more is the answers that we've heard, because everyone's is different. Mine included. Mine would be different. So I'll let you take it away. You might have some other commentary, but I'd just love to hear Brandon's answer.
No, I'd love to jump into it and see what Brandon has to respond with. So a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So through your work at Maverick VFX, you're creating powerful visual stories, building a lasting legacy in the industry. So what proverbial trees are you planting that you hope will inspire or impact your future generations in VFX and beyond?
I like that question.
It's a great question.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so the tree that we are planting is, there are a few things like from an innovation industry standpoint that I'm really proud of that we're doing. I can't even really talk about right now because it's a little top secret, but I feel is going to help people in the industry. But I think as a business owner and as a leader, I would say that it's bringing fun back into the process. It's really important. We have dailies every day, which is we look at our shots from the day and we talk about them. And for me, it's really important to connect all of these artists to the story that we're telling. And so often it's like, oh, just put these eyes on those trucks over there, right? But like, if you were to instead say, oh, this is great, except in the story, this truck's actually really sad because it feels left out. So how can we do that with just the eyes and help them work through it? So connecting to what it is that they are doing and the higher purpose of what it is that they're doing. I mean, interesting story, the elections on Tuesday, people were really upset at the company, and I reminded them about season one of The Handmaid's Tale came out 6 months after the 2016 election and what it did to the conversation. And I said exactly the same thing. This season will be premiering around about the same time
as the last one. And I just wanted to connect people to what it was that we were doing, right? Like, yeah, it's fun. It's silly. Like sometimes it's not most amazing, but A, it's going to bring joy. And at its best, it can change the conversation. So that's important to me. But at all times, no matter if it's a silly shot or a very serious shot, it's really important to bring fun back into it, because it's so hard to wake up in the morning if you don't like what you're doing.
I love that you've used the word fun in there, and a little bit different approach, but I always try to think of myself, put myself in a certain mindset is I don't have to, I get to, right? And it could even be as simple as people with the whole back to work thing, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to drive to work every day. I get to drive to work every day. And I get to listen to a audiobook, or I listen to music, or I get to listen to a podcast. I get to do something while I'm on that drive. I get to think about and reflect on my day. Mm-hmm. I get to. I don't have to. So it's similar, right? In the sense that you want to instill fun. So I think that's a great message.
Yeah. And I think that doesn't exist enough in workplaces. It should be fun. If we're going to work for a living, we might as well enjoy at least part of it. We all have to work. It should be fun. Brendan, what is, you'll know this better than anyone else. What is the term, you know, with Kevin Bacon? Is it called 6 degrees of separation to Kevin Bacon? Like everybody's.
Yeah.
So I am going to give our listeners a little bit of a treat. Very few people would know this. I was an extra in when Kevin Bacon was directing a movie called Losing Chase with his wife. I got to talk to Kevin Bacon because I was an extra riding a bike through Martha's Vineyard, which actually they had turned Bronte Harbor into. So there you go. There's your connection to Kevin Bacon. I love movies as well. So to me, this has been a thrill to talk to you. And hopefully we get to carry on the conversation. We're connected now. So hopefully we have many more conversations in our future. For listeners interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way to reach out to you?
LinkedIn.
Perfect.
LinkedIn works. Our website has an email address. I wouldn't recommend calling the office because you know, we're still very much work from home and I'm on set frequently, so I'll likely not pick up there.
LinkedIn's probably the best.
LinkedIn, yeah.
Well, listen, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn's probably the best spot. We saw it here today. It's clear as day to me. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.